This is Digital Story Podcast number 950, June 4th, 2024. Today's theme is a yay lens, a nay lens, and an it depends lens. I'm Derek Story. There's been lots to talk about regarding photography gear lately. Figma has been on an impressive roll. Panasonic released the full-frame S9 with a companion pancake lens, and Viltrox continues its steady march to fame and fortune. And as you can imagine, all lenses are not created the same, and there are definitely yays and nays with these latest announcements. In today's TDS Photography Podcast, we will separate the cheers from the jeers. I hope you enjoy the show. I think it's interesting how we go through these stretches where hardly anything seems to be going on, and then all of a sudden, a whole bunch of interesting stuff gets announced at once. I don't know if, you know, they're all watching each other and say, okay, they're going to release this, so we need to release that. Oh, let's hold this until they, or let's try to beat them to the punch. I don't know if all that's going on behind the scenes or not, but what I do know is that I'll just be kind of doing my thing one week and thinking about, okay, what should we talk about? And then bang, boom, bit-a-bang, bit-a-boom, all this stuff starts to happen. And over the last couple weeks, that has definitely been happening in the world of optics. So Sigma has been doing some crazy stuff lately. And then, just today, as I'm recording this, they announce a 28 to 45 millimeter f1.8 constant aperture art lens for Sony E. And I think it's also available in the Leica L mount. So we're going to talk about that. And then Panasonic, just a little before that, released their S9 camera, which has been very interesting to follow the reaction to that little full-frame compact. But with it, they also released a 26mm pancake lens, which at first, when you look at it, it goes, wow, that is really cute, and it looks so good on the Panasonic S9. Well, the story, or at least the good news, seems to end there with that lens. So I'm afraid this is going to be a nay. We'll get to that. And then Viltrox, oh my gosh, Viltrox just keeps coming up with great stuff. I was won over to the Viltrox camp with their 20mm f2.8 for my Nikon ZF. Well, they have a 16mm f1.8, 16mm f1.8 beauty. And that's a lens that's very tempting, but it's going to end up in the it depends category. So let's take a closer look at these three optics. We got something for everyone because the Viltrox is available in the Sony E mount and the Nikon Z mount. The Panasonic is, well, that's an L lens, right? So if you want it, it's available for the full frames. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the Sigma is for both Sony E and Leica L mount as well. So let's start with the yay lens, and that is the Sigma 28 to 45 millimeter f1.8 DGDN art lens. It's the world's first zoom lens, according to Sigma, for full frame mirrorless cameras with an f1.8 aperture throughout the entire zoom range. Not only that, they say, and this seems to be backed up with initial testing, prime-like optical performance throughout the zoom range, video-friendly design and functionality, and then, of course, it has its wide-to-normal focal range, which means a lighter kit bag without surrendering image quality. We'll get to the lighter kit bag here in just a few minutes, but I get their point. One lens can replace many, I think is what they're trying to say. The features of this lens, it's got two AFL buttons. It's got a focus mode switch. The coatings on it, super multi-layer and nanoporous coatings. Water and oil repellent coating on the front element. I love that when they do that. a dust and splash resistant design, and it has a durable brass bayonet mount. Brass, not plastic, right? 18 elements in 15 groups, 3 aspherical and 5 special low dispersion elements to minimize flare and ghosting and suppress various aberrations. Now, according to Sigma, this results in optical performance that meets or exceeds that of other Sigma art lenses, including the primes. An 11-blade rounded aperture, so you get large, smooth bokeh when used wide open. It also has an 11.9-inch minimum focusing distance across the entire zoom range, so you can get nice and tight. I believe you can get a magnification ratio of 1 to 4 at its longest focal length. Now, there is a downside, at least for me, the nimble photographer, on this, and that is size and weight. So the dimensions are 3.5 inches by 6 inches. So it's a big hunk of lens there. It's 6 inches. And it weighs in at 2.1 pounds. And the front filter size is 82 millimeter. So you could say that you come out ahead in your camera bag if you're replacing large aperture primes across the zooming range there. So if you have like a 28 and a 35 and maybe a 40 large aperture prime, well then, yes, you're going to come out ahead with this. But this is a fairly beefy lens and you need to have a body that can hold that lens so that you're shooting balanced. But nonetheless, f1.8 across the zooming range is pretty impressive. Now, there's just one other thing I want to bring up. This has really been on my mind since I got the Nikon ZF, in that when you have a camera that does so well at higher ISOs, where you don't even think about ISO 1600, you barely think about 3200, you hardly think about 6400 and on up the line, I would say the reason for a fast aperture zoom would have to be, you know, being able to control depth of field on a full frame camera, because honestly, you don't need the speed of f1.8 throughout the aperture range. Now, of course, it's nice to be able to keep the ISO as low as possible at all times. We all enjoy that. But I have to tell you that ISO is not something that I think about a whole lot when I'm shooting with the Nikon ZF. And I'm thinking more about other things. I just wanted to toss that in because this lens, it's a reasonable price tag for what you're getting, but it's still $1,349. So that's a pretty good investment. I mean, when I get up to the $1,000 mark, I'm sleeping on it, right? That is not impulse buy territory for me. $1,300 is not impulse buy. $200 is impulse buy. $1,300, I've got to sleep on it and decide if I'm willing to take that hit to my budget. And of course, you're paying for that fast aperture and that great optical quality. And as I mentioned, it's also available in the Leica L mount. But no matter how you slice it, this lens is impressive. It would be fun to shoot with. Amazing to have that fast aperture all the way through. Prime-like optical quality all the way through. And if you got a body that can hold that 2-pounder, right? You've got to put it in the yay category. Very impressed with Sigma. They've just been doing great stuff. This isn't the only super lens that they've announced lately, but it's the latest one, and I give it a big thumbs up. Now let's get to a nay. And this lens boggles my mind. First of all, I want to say that Panasonic, in my opinion, did not have a very good May, a month of May. Because I've got another story that follows this story that will build on that. And I hate jumping on them because I really like them as a camera company. I have a number of Panasonic lenses that I absolutely love, and I've had Panasonic cameras off and on through the years that I totally appreciate. So I don't take joy in this next little bit here, but what a head scratcher, the Panasonic 26mm f8. This little pancake lens was designed to go with a new full-frame Panasonic S9, which is a compact full-framer. So compact, in fact, that they weren't able to find room to put a viewfinder in it. There's no EVF in it. You just shoot off the screen with a full-frame camera. Okay, so yes, it's very compact. So they wanted a lens that looked good on the camera so that they could really show its compactness. And in that sense, in terms of aesthetics, that 26mm f8 accomplishes that goal. It makes sense. It looks good on the S9. But in terms of usefulness, this little guy really falls short. Here are a few reasons why. First of all, it's manual focus only, no AF. Okay, so no autofocus. Not only is there no autofocusing, there's no focusing scale on the lens to help you estimate. So if, you know, you're doing street photography, you're going, okay, I'm at F8, then I'm just going to put it like here at whatever, 10 feet, 8 feet, whatever. And then I'm knowing that I'm most things that within that range will probably be okay. You don't even get that. There's no focusing scale on this lens. It has an F8 aperture. And I don't mean an F8 maximum aperture, which is stunning enough. It only has F8 as an aperture. You can't stop down. There's no F11. There's no F16. No way to really control really bright light. And in fact, another way there's no way to control bright light is that there's no filter ring on this. No filter ring at all. So you can't put a polarizer on it to cut it down 2 stops. You can't put a neutral density on it. No filter ring on this little guy. It has a plastic lens mount. Okay, I have lenses that have plastic lens mounts and they seem to be fine, but I'm always disappointed when I see a plastic lens mount instead of a nice brass or aluminum mount. And then it has a $198 price tag, not $99 like Olympus did back in the day with its little Oreo cookie fisheye lens, which was just adorable, and it was literally a body cap lens and was the size of a body cap. This is $198. So if you buy this state-of-the-art Panasonic S9 and you get this little lens with it, you spend the extra $200 to get this little lens with it, you're getting manual focus with no focusing scale, F8 aperture only, no filter ring, plastic lens mount lens. I know Panasonic can do really cool pancake lenses. I have the Panasonic 20mm f1.7 that I shoot on my Olympus Pen F, and that is a great lens. It autofocuses. It has multiple aperture settings, right? It has a nice lens mount, and it has a filter ring. And it only costs me something like $270, $70 more. Or all that good stuff. So we know pancake lenses can have autofocus. There are many examples of that. Why Panasonic came out of the gate with this 26mm f8 only for their S9, which is already a troubled camera, I do not know. This is definitely a nay lens. Now we get to the it depends lens. The Viltrox AF 16mm f1.8 FE lens for Nikon Z mount, and it is also available in the Sony E mount. This is an interesting lens indeed. Featuring an ultra wide angle view for full frame cameras, the Viltrox AF 16mm f1.8 FE lens is an ideal choice for a wide variety of photographic pursuits, including landscape and architectural photography, astrophotography, and creative videography requiring close-up capabilities with expansive backgrounds. And I will say that I do think that the 16mm focal length on full frame is an exciting lens. Okay, let's get to some of the features. Easy to access aperture switch, enabling clicked and declicked operations. When switched to off, the stepless aperture mode quietly facilitates smooth depth of field transitions during video shooting. Built-in AF-MF switch for quickly alternating between autofocus and manual focus modes. FN1 and FN2 custom buttons allow for rapid access to key functions with select Sony cameras. They say Sony cameras here. I'm hoping for Nikon cameras as well. Sophisticated LCD screen. That's right. On the lens, there's a LCD screen displaying important shooting information, including object distance, FN icons, and aperture identification. An all-metal body and brass bayonet mount for a professional and reliable connection, dustproof and water-resistant design for use in adverse weather conditions, USB-C interface for firmware upgrades, and compatible with 77mm for optimal, widely available landscape filters. Now, before I go on, I just want to talk about the USB interface for these lenses. I don't know if I've ever seen or received notice of a firmware update for a lens that had a USB connection. And you may have, but I haven't. So I'm always just sort of looking at this thing and going, am I ever going to use you? I haven't to date. Maybe someday I will. Maybe I just have lenses that don't need firmware upgrades. Anyway, I move on. So there's a lot to like about this lens for $549. Again, a great price. But the reason why it's in the it depends category for me is that it's one of those lenses where you go, I would love to have that. I would love to shoot with that. That sounds so much fun. But then you think, okay, how often would I really use it? How often would I put it in my camera bag, right? I'm not a night sky photographer. I don't shoot architecture professionally. And I already have the Viltrox 20mm that I really like. And that's about as wide as I felt I needed to go on the Nikon ZF. I haven't really put that 20mm on and going, man, I wish I had the 16mm right now. This just isn't wide enough. I really do like that 20mm f2.8 though, I have to say. So this is one of those lenses that, as much as I appreciate what they've done, as much as I appreciate the design, as much as I would enjoy just being able to have it capriciously whenever I wanted, I don't think I'm going to spend the money for it unless I can come up with an actual use. In other words, unless I can justify the $549 and, more importantly, adding another lens to my lens cabinet that is brimming with beautiful optics right now. So that's why it depends. I'm not ruling it out, but I'm not saying yes. We'll wait and see if something comes up where I can say, oh, I know, the Viltrox 16mm would be perfect for that job. How much am I making on that job? I'm going to buy that lens. Anyway, so three very interesting lenses, very different, something for everyone here practically. And there are other optics out too. These are just the three that I thought worked with the, man, I'm really excited, man, I'm really disappointed, and boy, I'm on the fence. And these three lenses fit that well. I hope you enjoyed that bird's eye view of all three of them. Okay, speaking of a bad month for Panasonic, talking about the month of May, let's get to this next story that I'm sure you've heard a little something about. Panasonic explains stock photographs on S9 website. A mindset from over 20 years ago. And what are they talking about? Well, they're talking about images on the S9 website to supposedly illustrate the camera's functionality shot with other cameras, not shot with the S9. So this story is on petapixel.com. I have a link in the show notes. I'm going to read you parts of it, but you can read the whole thing there yourself with that link. Here we go. Earlier this week, it was revealed that Panasonic Japan used numerous stock photos, including at least one shot by a Nikon ambassador, to illustrate the new Lumix S9. Speaking to a local paper in Japan, Panasonic says it was the result of dated marketing mindset. I was fascinated by that term, so I read this article, and now I'm sharing it with you. Here we go. More. After Lumix S9 was announced, photographers in Japan noticed that the Japanese Lumix S9 product page featured numerous photos that weren't captured with the new camera, including a photo of a dog running across a field of grass that could be found on Shutterstock. Beyond that, one of the several stock photos seen on the page were captured by a Nikon ambassador. Once the discovery started to make the rounds online, Panasonic updated its website, and while it still includes photos that were not captured on the S9, those are clearly labeled as such now. It also issued a public apology. Quote, "We apologize to all Lumix and camera fans for causing great concern. Again, we're very sorry for causing you concern. All of us involved promise to be more sincere in our approach to you and to make changes." Let's continue with their quoting. More than 20 years ago, in a video camera advertisement, there was a technique of inserting images that were not the actual product. And we created the site with that mindset, a company representative tells the Japanese newspaper. Panasonic also tells the newspaper that the images will be updated over time and is taking steps to adjust its rules for marketing in the future to avoid this situation from happening again. Nikon says it never used stock photos to showcase functions and performance of its cameras. Canon says that when it comes to showing example situations where a camera could be used, the photos used to promote sample images and performance were taken with the actual product. Sony also says it uses stock photos as concepts in some cases, but says it won't use them to tell customers about types of photos they can expect to take. So at any rate, gosh. So we used to do this thing. You know, I ran graphics departments for years because, you know, I could always get a job as a graphic artist when photography jobs were lean or when writing jobs were lean. And we used to put TK on photos in mockups that indicated that they weren't the actual photo that we're going to use to come, right? And then that we will substitute the proper photo once we had it. And, you know, that can be dangerous if you don't have a good quality control system, because if that stock photo stays in there and it gets depressed and all that stuff, then you've got a real problem. That never happened on any of my projects, but I have seen it happen. It feels like Panasonic sort of had something like that practice going, but far sloppier. So, in addition to the S9 really disappointing many people who were waiting for that announcement, it is definitely not an X100 killer. It's definitely not a Ricoh killer. It's not even going to kill the Leica Deluxe. It's just its own thing, coupled with a lens that is very unimpressive. I guess I could say, now I know why they used other photos. No, that's far too mean. And like I said, I'm a big Panasonic fan, but boy, what a terrible May. Hopefully they can put it in their rearview mirror and just move on. Movie director Christopher Nolan has some great advice for photographers. And you can read this story and watch the video on fstoppers.com. I have a link in the show notes. I watched this video. It was a 12-minute video, and I just thought it was interesting. Now, I wouldn't say that after watching the video, there was fantastic advice specifically for photographers. What is interesting is we get to go inside the mind, a pretty good analysis of how Christopher Nolan views storytelling and how he uses the potential threat of failure to turn into success, and how he decides how much information to give the viewer and how much he withholds and lets the viewer connect the dots, his or herself. It's just, it's fun to go inside such an articulate and creative mind. And there are definitely lessons for people who are photographers, still photographers, and writers and so forth, because storytelling in the movies translates to storytelling in writing, even translates to storytelling with still photos. And I just thought that it was interesting and kind of stimulating, and I thought you might enjoy it. So I have a link to it in the show notes. Movie director Christopher Nolan, who just won an Academy Award, actually a number of Academy Awards for Oppenheimer. He shares some good stuff here, and it's a nice coffee break video that I think you'll enjoy. Okay, let's get to a little Virtual Camera Club news. The Nimble Photographer newsletter comes out every Thursday, and it is free. And in that newsletter, when the Panasonic S9 came out, you know, I was able to talk about it a little bit because the timing wasn't so good for the podcast. And, you know, so that's just one of those instances where the newsletter can capture something where the timing's off for the podcast. I do the newsletter every Thursday. It's a lot of fun. You never know what you're going to get. Sometimes you might get an essay like you did last week. Sometimes you might get a review. Sometimes you might get a coverage of photography news. It can be any of those things and other things as well. It just shows up in your inbox and it is free. You can sign up for it by clicking on the newsletter link at the Digital Story or at thenimblephotographer.com. I want to give a big shout out to our Inner Circle members and welcome all of our new Inner Circle members that came in through the membership drive. Wow, it is great having these new faces and these new voices at our Inner Circle space on Derek Story Online. You know, whenever you have new and interesting people join a party, the party just seems to get more fun. It just does. And that's what we have going right now. But I want to thank all of our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast. That's how we keep the terrible ads out of the show. You notice you get content and not underwear ads, right? No one wants underwear ads in their photography podcast. And you can thank the Inner Circle members for that. If you're interested in joining us, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, nose around a bit. You can join us right there. Then you'll get admission to the Inner Circle space on Derek Story Online. And then the fun begins. And then also, when I announce the next round of workshops for 2025, and we're working on some really good ones, you'll also get a discount. Yeah, you'll also get a discount on all the workshops that we do in 2025. All the workshops for 2024 are sold out, but 2025 will be here before you know it, and we'll be announcing schedule for next year at the end of the summer this year here. All right. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members. Thanks so much, all of you, for supporting this community. And finally, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story, the people who make beautiful photographic paper in a wide variety of sizes and a wide variety of surfaces. I mean, if there is a paper you want, Red River Paper makes it. There's a saying, there's a hardware store here in Santa Rosa, really big hardware store, and they serve contractors and everyone. And they have this saying, and they used to put it up on their billboard, that if we don't have it, you don't need it. I just always thought that was so good. That's the way I feel about Red River Paper when it comes to inkjet printing paper. They have everything, plus they have tutorials, plus they will help you choose the right paper for the project you're working on, plus they have templates, plus they have reviews. They have everything. And if they don't have something, then you probably just don't need it when it comes to inkjet printing. They also have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Click on that tile, nose around a bit, get yourself some inkjet paper, and start making beautiful art. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.